This is the August 4 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois, Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain from Chicago, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Let's begin, as usual, with a list of items we should discuss. We'll start with the things you think we ought to take up. Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting.
Well, I think probably first and foremost is, you know, how big is big of this crop? We have seen some private estimates, and we're going to see some more here before USDA's number comes out next week. So I think, you know, how big is big? Number two is we do have improved export demand. Is that going to be enough to actually make a difference in the supply-demand balance sheet? And number three, is there any outside market activities that are on the horizon that can maybe change the complexion of the grain complex?
Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities, your list?
Yeah, I think Dan hit most of them right where most of the market's looking at right now is how big is this crop and how low will prices go, you know, depending on what size it is. I think there's some question, you know, if the crop is as big as what some are saying with the dry areas and in the eastern part of the nation, so I think that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But, you know, when does the market get it priced in, I guess?
I'll add to your list some cash grain opportunities and talk to you, too, a little bit about conditions on the ground where you happen to live there, Sherman, because you didn't get a great start to the growing season. Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain, what's on your list?
I think we should talk about grain marketing a little bit. We've obviously reverted back into a very low price environment, and there are some grain marketing opportunities available. They might not be in the flat price, but I think to back to what you said previously to Sherman, we should talk about things in the cash market basis opportunities, perhaps spread opportunities. I'd also like to talk about funds and fund positioning. We know that these big funds have been enormous players in these grain markets. They've got different type positions on in the corn market and in the soybean markets. We should certainly touch on that a little bit.
All right. So I want to come back to you, Sherman, really quickly. Tell me about your growing season so far. It was tough to begin with.
Oh, very tough. Yeah. We got in the fields early, mid-April, had a decent looking start, and, you know, everybody got maybe a little bit planted. And then we just got pushed out by the rain. I mean, we got held out for an entire month down in this area from just too much rain. So we really got off to a slow start this spring. Tried to get everything planted, you know, corn and beans at the same time. Planted in muddy, wet conditions, some of the worst I'd seen in for quite a few years. But was able to get it all in, you know, before the second week of June, pretty much. We got done before the end of May with everything. But then, you know, we got hot and dry, and the crop really suffered there for quite some time. So it was pretty nerve-wracking, you know, with everything. But now things, you know, we've caught some rains. Things have seemed to kind of come back around. And potentially right now crops look pretty good, at least from where we're sitting.
Two things. Explain where Hudsonville, Illinois is for those listeners unfamiliar with
We are on the east side of Illinois, right up against the Wabash River, and we're about 25 miles south of Route 70.
And then tell me a little bit about whether you've been out into the cornfield. Have you made counts at this point, and how far along is your crop?
The early corn we got planted has some holes in it. We did some replanting and everything. It's pretty far along. It was planted there in that April 19th, 20th time frame. So it's, you know, it's getting pretty well made as far as it goes. But had some good ear counts, good kernel, you know, rows around. I found a lot of 18 around, you know, about 40 long in some of mine. The later stuff looks to be about the same, so to speak, but just farther behind. And it'll need some more, probably one more good rain or two anyway, to finish off as we go through the month of August. But potentially, right now, it looks, you know, pretty good. But we'll still need good weather to finish.
Are you surprised the late planted corn looks as good as it does?
Yes. Yeah, it doesn't take me long to say that, but yeah.
And what I'm trying to establish here, Sherman, by talking through this with you, because there will be areas in Ohio, in Indiana, in the Dakotas, where they have suffered through similar conditions. But I was pretty certain that the crop, while we've talked about rough conditions, maybe some dryness in some of those areas, maybe cutting the top off of this crop, it sounds like she's performed pretty well at this point. So
in my particular area, yes. Now, you don't have to go very far, you know, I think in several different directions where they missed some rains. But, you know, I do know that northern half of Ohio area, the Michigan area, eastern side of Indiana, northeastern corner of Indiana, you know, is getting really pretty dry. I mean, it's even still showing up on the drought monitor maps. The crop insurance guys are, you know, already saying they're going to have some really big claims over in those areas. So that kind of makes me wonder, you know, how big can this crop actually end up being? You know, will the good areas and the big areas make up for the areas that are, you know, really getting hurt by this dryness? And it's been interesting to see, you know, how much tip back is actually starting to show up in Iowa and parts of central Illinois. I think that a lot of producers are probably a little bit surprised by that. I think that was caused by the heat in June and July.
So how big is the crop, Dan Zwicker? F.C. Stone earlier in the week said 15.146 billion bushels, 175 bushels to the acre.
Well, I sure can't argue with that number from what I'm looking at here up in northwestern Illinois, right south of the Quad Cities. On the family farm here, I think we've got 300 bushel corn. If not 300, it's almost there. I think the soybeans are going to break records. Very, very tall beans. Now we'll have to see how many pods are set. Beans are hard to determine, but I guess the F.C. Stone numbers that came out early in the week did not surprise me at all. I was maybe thinking here a week ago the argument on the yield was going to maybe be between 168 and 172, and that still may be the case. The key is, will USDA, you know, go up into that 172, 173? I know it's mostly a stock count. And they sometimes are slow in coming up with the bigger number. That goes back to the old saying, big crops keep getting bigger, small crops keep getting smaller. So it'll be interesting to see where USDA starts out at. But I think they got the ammunition. We'll see what Infoma comes out with on Friday. But if they come up with some pretty good lofty numbers, I think USDA then will have the confidence to probably push their numbers at the upper end of the range based upon the crop rating levels. So I do think, and of course, that the F.C. Stone number is right, 175 bushel corn yield. You can quickly go to a 3 billion bushel carryout. We haven't seen a 3 billion bushel carryout since you work for me, Todd. That goes back a long way.
That's a long time ago, 1986.
And a 3 billion bushel corn crop, if that is what we're looking at, the grain trade, the big commercial grain companies are going to love it. They'll be able to keep the basis wide. They'll be able to go into a full carry market. They'll be able to charge high storage rates. They'll be able to just have it their way. They're probably already counting the dollars because that type of crop, I know farmers are going to be reluctant to sell it, but that size of crop is going to come to town one way or the other, and I think that all spells toward wider basis levels, carrying charge markets. That's something that the grain trade has not had the past couple of years. So they're looking at this year to recoup some of their minimal margins that they had the past couple of years.
Okay, Joe Vaklavic, you're all set up now. So we have a big crop, a big carryout, and you apparently have some ideas, I hope, for marketing this crop to make sure producers can come away with an income. What are they?
Well, to go back to what Dan said, I think that first off, you don't want to let the commercials get into your pockets any more than they absolutely need to. And we've already got a lot of carry in the corn market. There's not a whole lot of reason to pay for storage, I guess. I know a lot of guys have storage on the farm. If you can lock in some of these deferred prices, maybe that'll help you from paying commercial storage first off. Some of the basis opportunities, I think, are going to be varied. In the Western Corn Belt, I don't know if they're ever going to run into a situation where it's really good. In the East, because the crop wasn't so good last year, maybe you'll run into something before harvest with the old crop. But it's going to be an uphill battle. I don't know exactly how we're going to navigate through this thing. I'm really hoping that we can see some demand expansion. I just don't know where it's all going to come from. I'm positive that we're going to do enormous export business through the end of this year and certainly into next year. I think they've got big problems in South America. I just don't know if that's a big enough chunk to chew through what we're going to have. We know that the ethanol demand base is relatively stagnant. We're not going to see a ton of movement there. Feed demand is going to compete with wheat. So this is going to be a very tough deal, and this is all assuming that we've got this monster crop, and there's going to be a lot of debate about that for the next many, many weeks.
Speaking of the feed demand, I was reading what Carl Zuloff had written on the Farm Doc Daily website, maybe it was today, in fact, that it was posted. This is the fourth day of August, about wheat and its consumption by cattle in particular in the United States. His suggestion was that he thought maybe the USDA numbers were right, and that usually that is just a couple of month period, though, as we move towards harvest season. So maybe we can get through that quicker than some are thinking. However, there's a lot of wheat around, so I suppose that might not be the case. Speaking of which, you mentioned some spread opportunities. What are those, Joe?
Well, in the corn market, the fact that we've already got a lot of carry there, I think, is an opportunity to do some hedging into the deferred months. And I know that these are not attractive levels by any means, but you're going to have to sell the stuff anyways. And if you want to start looking at some stuff out into May, July of next year, the carry's there to be taken advantage of. You don't have to wait till the crop's in the bin to take advantage of that carry. In the soybean market, you're not going to run into anything like that. It seems like the bean market, for many years now, it's just never offered a whole lot of carry or a whole lot of incentive to store. So I think that in the situation, just like it was last year, the market's going to pay to store corn. It's probably not going to pay to store beans.
And your suggestion then is how to use it?
Well, you can use some sort of option strategy, I suppose, into the deferred months. Make your cash sales into the deferred months and store it on the farm if you can. Aside from that, I mean, there's no way to fix a bad market. There's no way to improve the margins right now, but the carry is something that you can at least hedge and, you know, buy yourself another 6 or 8 months and hope the price improves, as unrealistic as that seems given the crop size that we're talking about.
Well, Sherman Newland, how are you managing your cash side of the marketplace?
We've been locking in basis. I think if we have this big harvest that's coming, at least for a short term, the basis is probably going to widen out pretty good. I'd like to see some sort of bounce if we could. If for grain you have to haul in the fall and you can't, you know, store on the farm, I would highly recommend getting a basis locked in, see if we can get some sort of post-report bounce here in the month of August and make go ahead and sell those bushels, so you're not having to pay storage on that. I just have a hard time seeing, you know, storage pay at this time going into the fall with a wide basis. It's going to take a long time for that market to recover to get your money back out of those bushels. So, and, you know, if you need to re-own it, I was looking at earlier, I mean, you may even want to go out to the March options in the corn market just to buy some more time to hope we could maybe capture a, you know, demand rally based off South America and how things are going down there. You know, a 350 call is running 20 cents. I mean, storage, most storage is running 18 cents. So I think I'd rather look at doing something like that for producers right now.
Dan, do you think that there could be improved demand or enough improved demand to offset the large crop, and how do you suppose the S&D tables will look?
Well, I'm real bullish on demand. I have been for some time. I just think that this growing season has turned out to be so phenomenal, as Donald Trump would say, that we just got ourselves into a big supply hole. And I don't know how we're really going to dig ourselves out of it if the crop is indeed, you know, anywhere near what F.C. Stone came up with. Now, I think what this does, it does put a lot of downward pressure on prices, and the incentive to plant for the crop insurance price and the incentive to plant for the safety net farm program price may not be there next winter. We'll have to see, who knows what the fundamentals will become February when we start setting the crop insurance prices, but it could very easily be December corn futures could be way down, you know, into that $3 level or under. We could be and then I think if I remember right on the farm program, most producers opted for that Olympic average price, and I think that Olympic average price gave us 2 years of pretty high prices. So now those 2 years are gone. So now I think the Olympic average is not going to be very attractive for safety net. So I do think that you will see some downward. I think acreage numbers will probably shrink next year. Unless something changes between now and next winter to give this market a boost, because there's going to be some downward price pressure on this market that we won't have the incentive to plant for the crop insurance premium or plant for the government subsidy that seems, at least at the moment, seems to be all going toward the Northwest Corn Belt area, where the Eastern Corn Belt really hasn't participated in the safety net program.
Oh, so most had been in the Arc County side of that program, and the expectation is that maybe there might be $30 this year, $0 in the following year, that based off for corn, that is, based off of some numbers that Gary Schnittke posted to the Farm Doc Daily website. That was earlier in the week. You can go find that as well. Those were posted on the second day of August. Okay, so we have a big crop. We've got some expectations for demand. However, probably not enough to offset where we happen to stand at this point. And we mostly have to wait it out, I suppose. That leaves us with other things we should discuss. Fund positions, for instance, Joe Vaclavic, were on your list of items.
Well, you've got a really different scenario in the corn market versus the soybean market. You know, when we had the rally, which some people will call it a weather rally, some people will call it a speculative rally, whatever kind of rally that was, the big funds managed money. They held a very historically large long position at the peak of that rally. They've since liquidated the whole thing. They're now sitting on what I would probably call a modest net short position. So I think the risk of a really steep or vicious sell-off from this point might be kind of diminished because of that. We don't have the risk of a big time liquidation sale that already occurred. It was the move from 4.5 back to, you know, 330 is what we saw, and that was the big fund liquidation. Now in the soybeans, we've got something totally different. Managed money and the large speculators are still, even after a $2 sell-off, still very heavily long the bean market. It's probably been reduced again this week, but you've still got the risk in the beans of continued liquidation from these large speculators. And if the crop's as good as some people say that it is, if the weather patterns continue to be favorable into August, you've got to think that that long position is at risk. So I certainly think that you've probably got more downside risk here, or the risk of a much steeper sell-off in the bean market versus the corn market at this point in time.
We'll take it then as soon as a farmer feels comfortable that he has a crop on his field, that your expectation is he should go ahead and make a sale?
Well, I think that the marketing side of soybeans, I think if anything, the farmer probably got too aggressive too soon. I think it was the exact opposite in the corn, but we've had plenty of marketing opportunities, much greater than anybody would have ever expected this year in the beans. I would say that you're probably a little late to the party at this point, but I would imagine that a lot of farmers probably had more beans sold than they would have wanted on that move up to almost $12. Whereas in the corn, I don't think anybody ever got enough sold.
I suppose, Joe, but that means they have some beans yet to sell. Are you really sure that they shouldn't make another sale here? Not that I'm suggesting anything, because I'd like to know from everybody what they're thinking about this.
If you're coming back to me, I mean, it just depends on percentage wise, and I'd like to know the margins. You know, if you're selling futures at 960 or whatever the price is, and you're dealing with a wide basis and you're $9 cash or below, I mean, if that pays the bills and you had some stuff averaged up at better prices, yeah, sure, I think there's risk down to 850 or $8 if the crop's big. But we still don't know necessarily as much about this bean crop as we do the corn. But I like having just about everything hedged or sold at this point in time.
We still have South America yet to, you know, play out with La Nina and whatnot. But I think, as the case with all big crops, is farmers have to, I think, now begin to take a look at gross per acre rather than bushel price, and, you know, try to get a handle on actually how big their crop is out there in the field, and then they have to start adjusting their bushel price that they thought they were going to get, and see how that things work out. I guess that's about the only advice that I could give anybody, you know, probably at this point in time, Todd.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like we're, you know, kind of getting stuck in a range here right now. Until we can see how big this crop actually is. You know, I mean, I'm not arguing the fact that we're going to have a big crop in corn and beans, both, more than likely. I am kind of hesitant to say it's a 174 yet, you know, spread out over all those acres. I wouldn't disagree that USDA probably won't raise the yield 3 bushel next week, you know, but do we get that? Do we have that already priced in these markets in the corn? And maybe so in the beans also. So I'm wondering if we don't get some sort of recovery bounce after this report, you know, buy the rumor or sell the rumor, buy the fact type action going on. But I do think you got to be a little bit proactive. And, you know, in the beans, you know, if we could get, you know, back up in that 980 on the board level, that 983, you know, I think with a 30-35 cent basis for fall, you know, locking in something in through there if you needed to make some catch up sales, I think this is probably a good idea. You know, a few guys we've entertained, and actually I've done a few, you know, sold some bean calls, auger in some, you know, some of that type of money for a little short time through here on this stale, you know, sideways to lower type market. I think that can help a little bit, you know, I'm, you know, still wonder, you know, we still got a lot of August weather yet. Depends on how it plays out. Like I said, I'm still questioning the hot weather in June and July on this corn, whether it's going to be quite as big as, you know, F.C. Stone was saying. I'm not there yet. But I do know it's, you know, a big crop, and if we can get some bounces, I would want to make some sales on those bounces.
Hey, Joe Vaclavec, I want to take you back to earlier in the year and come back to corn. Is there any reason to be concerned at this point with the outside influence of China in the corn market? They had said earlier in the year that they would really begin to deplete their stockpile of corn beginning in the fall of this year. Of course, they'll be harvesting their own corn crop at the same time. There'll be a lot of corn coming onto the market.
I don't know if I'm that concerned about it. I know we've heard the story for a long time that there are enormous quality issues with these corn reserves that China has, and that a lot of it really can only be used for ethanol production and things along those lines. So I don't know. I feel like that's kind of a stale story at this point. If it was going to have an impact, I think it would have done it. I think that the U.S., regardless, you know, China's not a big buyer of U.S. corn by any means. So I think that if Brazil and South America continue to have problems, and it looks like they're going to, we're going to be the best store in town for corn on the world market. I think that's going to continue to be the case. Lack of exports isn't going to be the problem for us. The problem is just, I just think the crop's going to be too big, and I don't know if the other parts of the demand puzzle are going to be big enough or be able to increase enough to really fix what could be a very, very significant problem.
Any reason to believe that an acreage switch that may or may not have taken place in China will cause an export problem for U.S. soybeans to that nation?
Not the way that the export sales have been going here this week. I think we've had 6 or 7 days in a row where we've had something on the daily announcements, and a lot of it's been to China. So I have no reason to believe that at this point.
Time for your final words for the day. I think I'll start with you, Dan Zwicker, Zwicker Consulting.
Just one observation. I always watch gold and corn prices, and you can buy something like 445 bushels of corn with an ounce of gold. That's been the best buy in gold in history. And usually when we get to those type of extremes, something comes along and narrows that. So it's set up, I think, for corn to rally and gold to break. So that doesn't necessarily going to have to happen next week or next month, but I think longer term, you're going to see something materialize out of that big spread.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Joe Vaclavic is at Standard Grain. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Your final word?
I wouldn't be surprised if we posted some, quote, harvest lows very early in the year this year. I feel like the talk about the big crop is early. It's earlier than it usually is. The fact that we're already talking 175. I had somebody send me a 180 corn yield estimate this morning. It's very early. I wouldn't be surprised if we just discounted this stuff very, very quickly and posted some kind of low in August or September. Just a personal thought. That's kind of the way I'm feeling this thing. I feel like at this point the estimates are so lofty that, you know, if you start to revert back the other way for whatever reason, I think that that's where you could see a recovery, and I feel like it happens sooner rather than later.
And Sherman Newland, who's with Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois.
Yeah, I'd go along with what Joe's thinking, because I've been saying that myself. I think we're going to put in an early harvest low. They're you know, trading, or, you know, the trade's looking at a huge crop, and they're just trying to figure out how big it is, and they want to get that priced in. I think once they get that priced in, they'll start, you know, focusing more on the demand side of it. We've had some big exports, but they haven't really made a lot of difference here at the moment. But they will someday. And, you know, I think the South American weather this fall and winter will be a big player in the market. So I do think later on down the road this winter or spring, we will have higher prices than what we're going to be looking at here in the next, either now or the next 30 to 45 days.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. There you can always listen to the whole of our program. Our panelists on this August 4 edition have included Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities, Joe Vaclavic of Standard Grain, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting. On University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.